As Gauss' law suggests, we believe the general principle favoring Bitcoin's layered architecture is not one of software engineering so much as engineering entirely in general, yet as elegantly applied to software. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, everybody? This is Bitcoin Audible. I'm Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we are diving into, we have had nothing but a run of reads for like the last 20 episodes because there's just been so much good stuff. We are hitting part three, the final part of Alan Farrington's and Big Al's Only the Strong Survive. The full analysis and breakdown of the philosophical, the technical, and the economic arguments or assessment of what is happening in crypto outside of Bitcoin. So don't forget to keep an eye on BitcoinAudible.com. I am moving back over there to get a lot of the website updated and going through upgrading the method by which I'm going to have works exactly like this one available in full, uninterrupted, ad-free, podcast-free versions that you can download. I will keep you informed on the goings-on over there. So this will be added to the Why Bitcoin series as a downloadable version. But if you are just getting here, if you haven't listened to part one and part two, don't forget to go back. You need to listen to part one and part two of this because we're literally jumping into the end. This is going to be very confusing if you have not listened to the other parts. The foundations laid are what make this make sense. So now that we have all of those people out of here, let's thank our sponsors really quick and jump into this piece. First of all, keep your sats safe. You got to keep your Bitcoin savings secured. Get a hardware wallet that is secure and easy to use with the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. GuySwan.com/Bitbox will take you right there to check it out. And I think I've got it linked to the Bitcoin only version. And discount code Guy gets you 5% off everything in their store. Then for stacking your sats that you put on your Bitbox, my two favorite ways happen to be our two sponsors. And that is not a coincidence. I bugged the hell out of both of them to sponsor the show. First is the Swan Bitcoin Savings Plan. I buy $100 every week right now, automatically. You can set it up for daily, weekly, monthly, whatever works for you and whatever amount works for you. And then obviously I jump over and just buy the dip whenever the price dumps, I smash buy some more. And it automatically gets sent to my cold storage, to my hardware wallet. Could not be easier. It is the best way to regularly stack. SwanBitcoin.com/guy will take you right there. And then I even stack with what I do in fiat. I'm still stuck in the dollar world a little bit, but I have switched everything over to the Fold card. I have the premium, the Spin Plus card, as they call it, and I get sats back on literally every bill I pay, every purchase I make, every night out, every coffee I order with my Fold debit card. I've legitimately consolidated my fiat life onto Fold, and I get sats back everywhere. If you use my link, guyswan.com/fold, you'll get 20% off the premium rewards card. And that is literally the 1-2-3 punch of secure, automatic, and everywhere sat stacking running my life with Bitbox, Swan, Bitcoin, and Fold. And obviously, it also keeps the show available to you. With that, let's get to the meat and potatoes, as my favorite film professor would say. We are jumping into part three of Only the Strong Survive. Section 5. Layered Architecture and Gauss' Law. A complex system that works is invariably found to have evolved from a simple system that worked. The inverse proposition also appears to be true. A complex system designed from scratch never works and cannot be made to work. You have to start over. beginning with a working simple system. John Gall on crypto. Too long, didn't read. In section 5, we argue that the desirable features of crypto DeFi will likely emerge before too long on Bitcoin. Furthermore, we argued that the fact of these features taking longer and being more difficult to build is a fundamentally good thing. It reflects that Bitcoin's architecture has been built in a more robust and prudent manner than its crypto peers. Ironically, in the long run, this is likely precisely what will enable extension of functionality. We give basic details on a handful of relevant projects before analyzing this dichotomy in more philosophical detail. Jump to section 6 for a list of the most obvious reasons our entire thesis might be wrong. We believe the alleged promise of crypto will be fulfilled on Bitcoin sooner or later. The necessary development on Bitcoin is literally years behind its crypto peers, but once again, we would argue this doesn't matter. And in fact is a good thing. The contrary view is the category error of misapplying rules of thumb of ultra-high growth, early-stage, software, equity, investment, and business development. Bitcoin does not move fast and break things. It moves slowly and breaks nothing. If or when crypto breaks, Bitcoin will probably still be going strong, slowly and steadily winning the race. This section will first highlight a handful of projects that envisage bringing greater functionality to the Bitcoin space. Rooted in the censorship-resistant, integrity-assured, floating value native to a distributed ledger that is the Bitcoin time chain. This is not an endorsement of these projects or even a prediction of their success. Many or all may fail. Very limited information is included on each, more to pique the interest of the potentially curious reader than to really explain. But we will secondly go into more detail on why we think these projects, in spirit, embody a superior engineering ethic to that of crypto, layered architecture. In fact, while not hoped for, it would be interesting and perversely beneficial if at least one of these high-profile projects did fail, purely so as to then have it be totally obvious that Bitcoin itself is unaffected. Lightning is probably the best-known higher layer of Bitcoin given its obvious and growing potential for internet-native payments. Lightning uses the engineering construct of a payment channel, in which a smart contract on the time chain is configured such that two participants can be thought of as escrowing Bitcoin and trading off-chain receipts with one another, instead of committing to an on-chain transaction. These, quote, receipts have two clever properties. First, either property is able to use the most up-to-date receipt to, quote, close the channel, by triggering an on-chain transaction that settles the outstanding balance. This cryptographic enforcement mechanism is what makes the off-chain trading of, quote, receipts effectively indistinguishable from transferring, quote, real or on-chain Bitcoin to the extent the Lightning Network itself remains functional. Lightning can hence be thought of as extending the functionality of the main chain to the properties of the network, such as instant, effective settlement, and very low cost. Second, the receipts are such that they can be relayed across more than one channel and simultaneously settled across all channels involved. If Alice has a channel with Bob, and Bob with Carol, and Alice wants to send Bitcoin to Carol, there is a similar mechanism of cryptographic enforcement by which Alice can pay Bob if and only if Bob pays Carol. Bob has no reason not to pay Carol, given the enforcement mechanism means he knows he can both trigger Alice's payment and get a very, very small fee for his service. Lightning is clearly useful in terms of this basic payment routing and settlement functionality, but is arguably far more exciting with a more philosophical perspective. We can think of Lightning payments as consisting of data relaying encrypted and onion-routed payments instructions, but we can also invert this interpretation. We can instead think of them as payments for encrypted and onion-routed data. This may well be far more profound in the long run, as it potentially solves the classic problem in distributed systems of who is motivated to subsidize the means of achieving privacy. The largest such network on the public internet, Tor, has struggled to scale beyond hardcore privacy enthusiasts, given the added cost of operating a node, and perversely, marks out precisely those who want to act privately or facilitate privacy for others. Lightning, on the other hand, embraces privacy not only as a default, but as a more efficient than any alternative method of data transfer, given it is directly self-monetized. This realization lets us expand our understanding well beyond just privacy and just payments. Privacy is a use case worth paying for, and better still, worth making the default by a form of coincidental universal subsidization. But data transfer that has been monetized is a more general use case for which privacy is surely a bonus. We believe that the ability to build monetary transfer directly into data transfer will prove revolutionary for the architecture of the internet. It has already enabled the likes of Sphinx Chat, a chat and content streaming app that can be thought of as a third layer, in that its data transfer between instances literally is Lightning payments. But we strongly predict that on a long enough time horizon, more or less all online data transfer will have a Lightning component, from the likes of metered API calls on the more technical end to pseudonymous identity verification and streamed content monetization on the more consumer-facing side. All because it would be foolish not to. It would be throwing away revolutionary functionality. Speaking of revolutionary functionality, we will close this blurb with the observation that the Taproot protocol upgrade expected to go live on the network in November brings the tantalizing prospect of native and programmable asset issuance. Although we caution, the thinking on this possibility is very early stage. If successful, we can't help but feel it would spell the end of any credible, quote, use case for just about every crypto token. You very much will not need a token for that. Liquid. Liquid enables the extension of Bitcoin functionality using the engineering construct of a side chain, adding such features as asset issuance, confidential transactions, and more. The rough idea of a side chain is to consciously trade off speed and programmability against decentralization and trustlessness. As opposed to assuming that all can be built into the same blockchain, for example, with no necessary trade-offs or adverse consequences. Hence, Liquid is deliberately more centralized than the Bitcoin time chain, and the Lightning Network as mentioned for context, but is intended to be used in environments in which this doesn't matter or is expected, while retaining security and robustness as borrowed from Bitcoin itself. Liquid has 1 minute block times with finality after two confirmations and a fully expressive scripting language for programming smart contracts which manipulate Liquid Bitcoin, or LBTC, the asset native to the sidechain ecosystem. Bitcoin is pegged into the sidechain network to unlock Liquid Bitcoin, so there is always a one-to-one relationship between BTC and LBTC. Asset issuance in Liquid can be used to create stablecoins, game currencies, NFTs, and security tokens. It is also possible to create Lightning networks on top of Liquid assets, such as USDT, which would enable stablecoins to be used as payment methods. Discrete log contracts. DLCs provide Bitcoin a way to implement any kind of arbitrarily defined contract directly on the base layer of Bitcoin. DLCs use an oracle or set of oracles to attest to an event that happened outside of the Bitcoin time chain's own data, and this attestation is used to execute a contract. These oracles can attest to anything from who won the Super Bowl, the Bitcoin price, or the movement of the stars. This potentially provides the means to build not only powerful contract structures, but staples of crypto, such as stablecoins. DLCs are also very basic and flexible in their structure, so they can be used in conjunction on almost any of Bitcoin's higher layers. There are already proposals for how to implement DLCs on sidechains and even routed across the Lightning Network. RGB. RGB is an attempt to keep relevant data about the validity of asset transfers and other financial contracts outside the relatively scarce, expensive, and public, i.e. not private, global consensus of the Bitcoin time chain, and instead validate such data in an off-chain, client-side setting. The thinking behind RGB is that the mining process only really needs to include valid transactions in the time chain. And hence, there may be a number of benefits if there were a way to move the burden of validation to only those nodes involved in a truly peer-to-peer transfer. While ways to achieve this for Bitcoin the asset itself are still speculative, Bitcoin-based non-Bitcoin assets are the perfect candidates in which to experiment and trial such a design. They would be client-side validated by definition, since miners can't and won't validate the rules of non-Bitcoin asset schema. There is also hope that RGB can provide building blocks for other off-chain, higher-layer projects to plug and play to ease the burden of their own native technical hurdles, or potentially overcome them entirely, such as always online requirements for nodes or users, a bloat of data that must be retained but cannot be shared, and so on. Miscellaneous. The space is proliferating faster than we can claim to understand or keep track of. But to flag just a few more higher order layer applications, each of Lightning and Liquid are starting to see higher order application layers, such as Sphinx Chat and Impervious.ai in the former case, and HODL HODL and BitMatrix in the latter case. But there are yet more ways of creating higher layers on the basis of different forms of integration with the Bitcoin time chain. These are typically aimed at capturing some notion of smart contracting and creating a range of developer tools for truly decentralized finance, mindful of the precise security trade-offs given how they interact with Bitcoin. This is rather than going for everything all at once, as is seemingly the norm in crypto. Given the limitations of Bitcoin's scripting language, and the importance of these limitations as having emerged from security trade-offs, there are, roughly speaking, two options for tying the state of smart contracts to the Bitcoin time chain. 1. The smart contract states are off-chain and require some or other clever design of offline coordination. Or 2. A separate layer that uses a native asset representing a right to pooled computation, an equivalent of Ethereum's gas, to execute contracts that have global networked state. RGB and DLCs arguably fit option 1, as does a smart contracting platform called RSK, one fascinating characteristic of which is that its smart contracting engine was originally forked from the Ethereum virtual machine. This has allowed it to be compatible with Ethereum-based smart contracts. One wonders in that case why a developer wouldn't opt to run the exact same application for decentralized finance in a system with dramatically better security on the basis of philosophical, technical, and economic coherence. Unfortunately, the answer is very likely that computation in RSK is, quote, paid for with RBTC, pegged one-to-one with Bitcoin, in the vein of LBTC on Liquid. In other words, there is no potential for a speculative frenzy of token appreciation. Stacks, on the other hand, explores the design space of two and aims to bring Ethereum-like generalized smart contracts to the Bitcoin ecosystem without sacrificing Bitcoin's security guarantees. Stacks is not without technical controversy, as we note in the footnote below, but it is additionally interesting for what we can only think to call social reasons, given the project initially started out as its own independent blockchain. To paraphrase what its creator Munib Ali told us, the authors, in private communication, the Blockstack team realized exactly the thesis we are proposing in this document many years ago, and pivoted the project to the sturdier foundation of Bitcoin. The curious reader is directed to an excellent write-up of the history and attributes of Bitcoin sidechains, written by Sergio Damian Lerner, the designer of RSK, which discusses Liquid, RSK, and Stacks. Projects of this sort are expected to continue to proliferate, be they higher layers on Lightning or Liquid, higher layers on higher layers on Lightning, as seems imminent whenever a functioning app is built on Impervious.ai, for example, or the discovery and experimentation of more novel techniques for building directly on Bitcoin, such as RGB, RSK, and Stacks, that will inevitably continue. Many, if not all, of the above are often lazily described as clunky workarounds to the technical limitations of the Bitcoin time chain. But we vigorously reject this notion on the technical grounds that layered architecture is objectively optimal engineering. Cramming all the features of Lightning, Liquid, DLCs, RGB, and so on into the main chain is not only probably technically impossible, but in a more conceptual sense, arguably an aesthetic sense, is just an obviously bad idea. It would introduce unknowable attack vectors and hence holistic fragility. The naive view is that this compounds the utility of every functionality. The mature view is that it compounds only the vulnerabilities. Each functionality is primarily affected to the extent it has become more vulnerable, and utility dramatically decreases, both at the level of individual functionalities and the protocol as a whole. If TCP/IP had been configured to enable video streaming, for example, it would have been broken immediately if it had ever worked at all. This is a feature, not a bug. It reflects the mindset not of a cargo cult bureaucrat, but rather of a prudent and humble engineer, mindful of Gall's Law from John Gall's Systemantics, with which we opened this section. As Gall's Law suggests, we believe the general principle favoring Bitcoin's layered architecture is not one of software engineering so much as engineering entirely in general, yet as elegantly applied to software. Quote, "This clear specialization ensures performance, reliability, and scalability of the internet, as Thibald Marichal puts in A Monetary Layer for the Internet." This might seem like an argument in favor of the likes of the Lightning Network, from an oddly axiomatic basis, and almost a fatalistic one along the lines of, software eats the money. However, this rough idea has ample historical precedent that predates software by several centuries, probably precisely because the key insight is one of institutional design, transcending software entirely, and of which software is one special case amongst many. One of the features of the complex web of financial and banking relations in Renaissance Florence was the practice of offsetting, non-cash and non-bank payments between merchants by flow of credit and debit. Richard Goldthwaite describes in The Economy of Renaissance Florence that, quote, "One could draw on his credit by written order for transfer to a third party, and the transfer could be passed on to a fourth party and even on to others by mere book entry." These, quote, "payment channels were clearly private," and a final link to the Lightning Network is to realize this assumed a kind of going concern. In other words, that it was worth costlessly keeping credit channels open and updating them rather than closing them at cost, which would involve settling either in bank transfer or with true, quote, final settlement in specie. While the mechanical illusion is intriguing, Goldthwaite goes on to place offsetting amid the diversity of financial customs. Local banks did not have a commanding position in the local credit market. In the supply side of the market, the weakness of these banks in attracting deposits was exposed by their failure to provide an outlet for the savings that began to accumulate in the hands of artisans and shopkeepers in the second half of the 15th century. The depositories opened by the Innocenti, Santa Maria Nuova, and the Badia, in contrast, responded to this void in the market, signaling the new direction banking was to take in the following century. But it is when we turn to the demand side of the market that we can see banks' relative inability to attract capital. Local banks, and especially pawnbrokers, served the general public as sources for direct loans, but they were hardly the only conduit to credit. Direct loans were also readily available outside of banks. Evidence for loans from private persons abounds in the city's oldest notarial records. Moreover, debts and credits recorded in these official documents could be reassigned through another notarial act, although it is difficult to say that traffic of this kind constituted a secondary market. Although by no means Goldthwaite's point, there is an obvious lesson from this historical analysis in comparing the merchant-driven, hard-money economic system of Renaissance Florence to the finance-driven, soft money of modernity, and taken to the power of some fresh hell by crypto. The lesson becomes even more helpful with an eye on a Bitcoin standard near to medium-term future. Financial institutions and payment methods alike would mold themselves to the heterogeneity of time preferences, commercial requirements, and interpersonal customs to be found across society. There will not be the bank gatekeeper to all finance, nor the protocol carrier of all data and value. There will be a supply and demand of capital, liquid and illiquid, short-term and long-term, risk-seeking and risk-averse, financial and production, personal and professional, payment and settlement. Moreover, in Florence, this diversity of capital was priced and kept honest relative to the store of value of elemental gold. Gold itself was therefore disconnected from the likelihood of gradually debased coinage or even confusing alternatives for units of account. Gold was for final settlement, not for payment, credit, or capital. Of course, as effective and elegant as this system was, Bitcoin is even better. In this light, Lightning, Liquid, DLCs, RGB, Stacks, and whatever else are not clunky or bizarre in the slightest. They are natural, complementary, healthy, and aesthetically and institutionally sound, as will be all other successful and differentiated extensions of the base layer. And in this light also, Curve, Aave, and so on are deeply unsound. The entire Ethereum, Solana, Cardano, EOS, Tezos, Tron, etc. time chains carry and depend in part on the success of their crypto ecosystems. If Lightning is hacked and the liquidity drained, Bitcoin won't care. The DAO hard fork, on the other hand, is a clear precedent, which incidentally happened to evidence violation of just about every one of Ostrom's design principles for common pool resources. In the Odd Lots episode mentioned above, Wiesenthal made an astute observation just a little later in his introduction, saying,
"It's not obvious to me that a lot of the DeFi stuff, and earlier in the week we talked to Tom Schmidt about yield farming and all that stuff, and automated market makers. It's not obvious to me that like the people in the Bitcoin world like want those things. Whether there's really an appetite or an interest for all that speculation and trading."
He is nearly right. What is genius about Bitcoin's architecture, arguably its governance, to foreshadow Appendix A for the interested reader, is that it doesn't matter what people want or have an appetite for. Everybody competes for block space with fees, and beyond that, leaves each other alone. If RGB falls apart, Lightning users won't care, and vice versa. If hardcore enthusiasts object in principle to stacks stamping, polluting the time chain, or to tokens or NFTs on Liquid, pegged to a DLC, both, neither, whatever, then none of Blockstack, Blockstream, SherdBit, Lightning Labs, Liquid users, Lightning users, DLC users, anybody at all, nor Bitcoin itself, will care. The purists are free to not engage with any of it, and the reckless experimenters are free not to require the engagement of dissenters. Nobody needs to care, because nobody is harmed by anybody else's behavior. Risk is sandboxed for those intending to take it. Nothing is systemically important. Imagine if regular finance had so magical a property. All this loops back around to the Pfefferian argument first articulated in Section 2, that there is reason to suspect that tokens in non-Bitcoin crypto that aim for similar functionality, even if they work technically, will have effectively unbounded velocity, negligible holding periods, hence no reason to sustain value, hence actually no reason to suspect they will work technically. The lack of an incentive to hold comes precisely from the tokens not being money. Money is universal credit, not highly specific credit. Highly specific credit to be used in a casino or providing liquidity to an automated market maker will lose in the market to universal money for painfully obvious reasons. Although the subject of a fascinating ongoing debate as to its applicability in light of Bitcoin's emergence, this is a key element of the Mises regression theorem from the theory of money and credit, or rather, we can infer from the theorem an inverse non-implication. A quote token that is tradable only for a highly specific set of goods or services will not become money in the presence of less restricted but otherwise technologically comparable competition. This argument can be graduated to a more general criticism that we can ultimately tie directly to Bitcoin. For most and probably all of the crypto projects in question, there is no need for a token. This might sound like a devastating critique, but it actually contains the seeds of an olive branch. It is not necessarily that the ideas are bad in terms of the functionality or ethos aimed for. It is that the architecture supporting the current instantiation of the idea is poorly conceived and likely will not last. But it will likely be possible to rebuild most of it on Bitcoin. Layered architecture is the essence of the prospects for success of Lightning, Liquid, and so on. Or in the framing just adopted, they don't need a token either. Which is great because they don't have one. They use Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the universal credit on which their highly specific credit is built, and to which it refers. Or not even credit, but assets that benefit from censorship-resistant, integrity-assured digital existence on a distributed ledger. We stress once more that we do not directly endorse the technical or commercial merits of any of these projects, and are even partial to the idea that the total failure of a few of them would be an excellent stress test for Bitcoin. Purely optically, that is. We know from first principles there would be no real stress test, but for those less interested in first principles and more in hype and optics, this would be useful. When the Ethereum DAO was exploited, the entire community had to hard fork the time chain to reverse the catastrophic ecosystem risk. Bitcoin will never need to do this. Section 6. Why we might be wrong. Alright, Quick break right here before jumping into this section to remind you, you gotta keep your Bitcoin safe. Our environment right now, politically, financially, socially, comes with a high degree of uncertainty and risk. I think that's hard to refute. The best way to protect yourself, in my humble opinion, at least my strategy, is to buy Bitcoin and hold your own keys. The Bitbox O2 hardware wallet is the way to do this as simply and securely as I can recommend. It is very easy to set up for those of you that are, you know, kind of intimidated by the technical side of this for good reason. A lot of the nerds in Bitcoin really take that for granted. It's hard to take that jump, but the Bitbox is literally a huge step for your security, and it's a really small step when it comes to that technical involvement side of things. It's just generally a very intuitive and easy to use device. But then for those who do want that added complexity and advanced features, so to speak, the Bitbox is there for you too. If for anybody who wants to, you know, run their own node and connect to it, want to run everything over Tor, they want their coin control, they like to pick between whether they use P2SH or legacy addresses and SegWit and all that fun nerdy crap, the Bitbox has the best of both worlds. Get yours today by going to guyswan.com/bitbox and also use code GUY. I mean, it's on the page so you can see it, but use code GUY for 5% off everything that you get to boost your Bitcoin security. So the Bitbox, but also any of the other little security gadgets that the Shift Crypto Store has for you. Again, guyswan.com/bitbox. All right, with that, let's jump back in. Section 6. Why we might be wrong. I don't really care about being right. I just care about success. I don't mind being wrong. And I'll admit that I'm wrong a lot. It doesn't really matter to me much. What matters to me is that we do the right thing. Steve Jobs on crypto. Too long, didn't read. Self-explanatory. Only the conclusion follows. We hope you enjoyed. This is clearly not an exhaustive list, but in the interests of intellectual honesty and hence professional seriousness, we may turn out to be wrong for any or all of the following reasons. First, we have overestimated, or are simply wrong about, crypto's technical flaws and underestimated its social strengths. Ever-growing inflows of capital, talent, and interlinked network effects may contribute to overcoming whatever flaws exist and the problems are successfully engineered around. Crypto programmability is never truly matched on Bitcoin, and the value spiral and Pfefferian holding period problem alike are nipped in the bud by provably enforceable atomic swaps, such that Ethereum, Solana, Cardano, EOS, Tezos, Tron, etc. effectively become sidechains, or ditto, but for obviously different reasons for Monero or Zcash, in which case the rest of crypto across either flavor of ecosystem can tack on too. Wrapped BTC arguably demonstrates pretty cleanly how this would work, except that what we suggest here would be more robust still. DeFi on Bitcoin just doesn't work for whatever reason beyond the lack of programmability suggested above. Maybe all the projects above fail for technical reasons, while their social utility has become clear and hence is serviced by crypto. Staking bootstraps financial viability on the basis of representing an actual provable yield to ecosystem participants, short-circuiting what we described above as something of a logical death spiral, informing a robust foundation for capital formation that we have argued is currently lacking. Bitcoin itself fails, and everything we say here is relatively moot because crypto are all we have left. For the sake of argument, as it is hard to imagine Bitcoin fails but altcoins do not, let's say this is due to some cryptographic vulnerability too grave to hard fork out, and that crypto just doesn't have. Or perhaps governments unanimously coordinate an all-out attack against Bitcoin that, as we know cannot happen, doesn't destroy the network or disrupt its ability to facilitate savings and payments, but does make it untenable as a basis for legal capital formation. social factors. It all works, but people don't like using it because it's too clunky. Again, we feel this is unlikely, but there is something of a precedent in the development of Web 2.0. We could have all cared about privacy, sovereignty, and so on. Some did, and did so loudly, but it wasn't enough because the vast majority preferred the slick utility of Facebook and Google. And more of a caveat, but just to clarify, we have only focused on crypto ecosystems that explicitly try to capture decentralized finance, whether as competitive monetary base layers or as infrastructure for capital formation. We do not focus at all on the likes of Filecoin, SIA, Storage, etc. that are derivative of blockchain technology, but which aim to solve some completely different technical problem. Although it is certainly possible that many of our criticisms above apply to these protocols, they may succeed, for all we know, and their tokens may even attract a stable or growing value. We simply point out that we are not intentionally providing a critique of these assets. Conclusion. Where we go from here. It ain't what you don't know that gets you in trouble. It's what you know that just ain't so. Mark Twain on crypto. Everything above is what we believe as professional capital allocators and technology enthusiasts. To borrow a wonderful quip from Elise Killeen in the same Odd Lots podcast referenced a few times above, we are not Bitcoin maximalists, as it might seem natural to classify us in light of this piece. We are sound tech maximalists. We might cheekily go even further and say we are intellectual honesty and responsibility maximalists, which itself explains our fascination with Bitcoin. And besides, there are plenty of technologies besides Bitcoin in which we are intellectually interested, and towards which we will seriously consider advocating putting capital to work, contingent on all the usual factors of a sound business plan, a trustworthy management team, a realistic assessment of the technological and competitive landscape, and so on and so forth. But for now, let us leave our thoughts at the following. We are excited by Bitcoin, but crypto, not so much. And that does it. There's still Appendix A, breaking down common pool resources, what they mean by that term, and a couple of other kind of questions and clarifications and stuff as they go through this. I think there's like 5 or 6, 7 different sections here. And then they go into some rehypothecation algebra. Not super necessary. I may have this in the version available downloaded. If you want to download it on the website when I have this full thing from start to finish. Not so sure about the rehypothecation. I can't say that word right now. The rehypothecation algebra. I give up. I'm not going to hit it. But I may not have that last little bit just because it's mostly math. But it will be obviously linked to this actual paper. So if you really want to go dig into it and find that, you can find it. Now for this section, I'm not going to do a really long guy's take, but the thing that I've found most interesting, and this is something that I dug into previously on the show, and I found a original architect of the internet protocols, basically someone who was very closely in the design, very close into the design and influential in a lot of the major decisions around TCP/IP and the fundamental protocols that essentially make the internet work. If anybody can remember that person's name, I would very much appreciate a DM because I've spent the last like 20 or 30 minutes looking for him and I cannot find it. I know I saved this information somewhere in my mountain of links, but it's basically, I've got such a collection of stuff right now that is not very well organized that is basically like just searching for it on the internet. I don't really have any benefit from the fact that I saved it. But during the early development, this person whose name I cannot remember, basically pushed the direction, the architecture, towards simplifying and towards breaking TCP down into the single job, TCP IP down into the single job that it was supposed to do. And I'm pretty sure this specific remark that was made was in response to, or was related to, TCP version 5, TCP IP v5, which attempted to put, what I actually think the authors here, Alan and Big Al, were alluding to this, is what if we put streaming directly into the TCP IP protocol and bloated it and, you know, made it less simple, you know, made it more complicated and less robust in the single job that it is supposed to do, which is actually what they attempted to do with TCP IP version 5, is in the, I think it was in the late 80s, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember the time frame, but this individual in question basically was responding to this and saying, no, we've kind of lost sight of what we're doing here. We're violating the layers rule, that we're not going to get robustness and we're not going to be able to make this thing, build this thing out with the degree of complexity that the ultimate system, the ultimate ecosystem needs, if we start violating that fundamental engineering principle at this layer. And he was actually a big reason, he was one of the key proponents that kept TCP/IP simple in the way it was, that allowed the internet to build out like it did, to become such a vast, complex, multi-protocol environment, basically. And I love that they started with that John Gall quote, was, quote, "A complex system that works is invariably found to have evolved from a simple system that worked. The inverse proposition also appears to be true. A complex system designed from scratch never works and cannot be made to work. You have to start over, beginning with a working simple system." And I think something that we actually see in particularly the crypto space trying to push, trying to re-engineer itself and squeeze itself back into this principle, was that Solidity, the scripting system on top of Ethereum, has actually been over time more and more constrained rather than expanded, which it was at the beginning. It's actually become more concise and attempted to remove its vulnerabilities. And then at the exact same time, you see that all of these systems, the underlying base layers, are getting so bloated. Now everybody's talking about layers, which the original base layers, the alternative blockchains and the alternative crypto, were almost universally sold because their base layer could do everything and you would never have any problems, and the layered approach was a bad idea. And now it's like the thing that I see constantly being pushed by all of the crypto people I follow. And whenever I go venturing into that space for the Shitcoin Insider show or something, I'm constantly seeing, you got to use rollups, you got to do this and that. Everything is going to be built out in layers. And if that's the case, then your whole marketing, the entire premise of having these huge, elaborate base layers where you're going to do freaking everything on the base layer, is already up in smoke. You're saying that you shouldn't be doing that anymore when that's the only value proposition of replacing Bitcoin with all of those things. Bitcoin is the one that's moving at the layered approach faster in a more robust way than all of the other options. So if to actually have global micropayments, to actually have smart contracts that are scalable, and to actually have a huge diverse ecosystem that is increasingly complex but actually secure at the exact same time, secure, robust, and resilient, if we need layers, then what are we doing? How are we solving any problem? How are you going to re-engineer the, you know, the Jersey style engineering on top of a system that has rejected it from the very beginning? It's essentially an argument that after you've built the antithesis of Bitcoin and the assurances that it provides, that you're going to re-engineer the bloated, complex, and expansive system, you're going to reconstrain it back down to provide what Bitcoin provides. And because this episode, and really this show, is not really about this topic, this is more of a Shitcoin Insider thing, but I won't even get into some of the rollups that I've started to look into that actually have like one set of keys. that run the whole thing, which again defeats the purpose of even calling it a roll-up. If you've got master keys, you're just, why not just do it on Coinbase? I don't know. Some of the constant justifications and reworkings and remarketing and changing of narratives of the crypto space. I mean, yes, I'm looking at the entire thing as a whole, and I want to be at least a little bit fair that I'm generally looking at the things that baffle me about it. That the number of those things is just pretty massive. And I think the investment rationale, the mindset, I love in this entire piece, I think this was in part two, about the idea that this was very much a misapplication of the VC Silicon Valley software mindset of, oh, we want to be the Amazon of pet food sort of thing that happened in the 1990s, in the late 90s and early 2000s, where everybody's just, there's this new model that everybody's working so hard to get the network effect. And they're applying this to crypto in a way that is a category error. I think that's a really, really good framing that I think 100% applies to this system, and where a lot of what they are doing is just kind of completely missing the fundamental mark, but on the surface looks like all of the things it needs to look like. That analogy, again, that I mentioned in yesterday's episode of, it would be, crypto is what finance would look like if you rebuilt it in a 100% digital sense, and you just wanted to make sure it looked exactly like finance looks, but then completely missed the point of it all and had none of the underlying reasons for it to even be there. That arbitrage is a meaningful thing when you were talking about arbitraging between productive yields of a thing that has value, of a stock that you are owning, of capital in the real world, and it's just the facade of that. It's fake yield of different inflationary tokens that are specifically there and only have liquidity because people are chasing the inflation of token A over token B. Like, it kind of feels like the end game of the debt bubble that we are in, the entire debt and kind of fiat mindset environment of so much excess capital chasing yield in an economy, an entire ecosystem that has essentially none of it. It just increasingly gets more and more abstract. The instruments themselves and the quote-unquote value themselves get so derivative on top of derivative on top of derivative and abstraction of abstractions that it just eventually just becomes points. And everybody's just rushing, like, moving hundreds of billions, even trillions of dollars around in points that have nothing behind them and don't exist for any specific reason. And that's really what crypto feels like to me. Maybe that's not being fair, but I think this piece does such a good job of breaking it down. And like I said, I will have the entire thing available in some form or fashion. I'm still constantly arguing with myself about what the best way to release this, to have this available is, but I will have it on BitcoinAudible.com. So be sure to check that out. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. Don't forget to check out our amazing sponsors that keep this show alive. We got the Fold card. Get sats back on everything in your life. We got the BitBox O2 hardware wallet. Keep those sats safe. And we've got SwanBitcoin.com. SwanBitcoin.com/guy. The best place to stack your sats automatically, to grow your stack, get rewards, and keep it safe. Those are our three sponsors. Check them out at guyswan.com right at the top of the page. Thank you so much for listening. I've got so much coming this week and the next couple of months. A lot of stuff in the works, and I'm hoping to get Bitcoin Audible a little bit refreshed with a lot of different things to explore and even easier to search through, hopefully. Some other projects in the background. So don't forget to subscribe and follow me on Twitter at TheGuySwan. This is Bitcoin Audible. I'm Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. This has been Bitcoin Audible. a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.